AM 1290 and 95.7 FM. News Talk Radio WHIO and Sim Trainer Indoor Range and Firearms Training Center present Shooting from the Hip. Straight talk about firearms, ammunition, self-defense, when and where you can carry, legislation, and legal issues. All about safety, training, and so much more. Your hosts are Jeff Pedro and Mark Avery. Jeff is a 24-year veteran police officer, currently assigned City of Kettering Detective, and owner and lead instructor at Sim Trainer. Mark is a retired Air Force officer, senior staff instructor at Sim Trainer, and NRA-certified instructor in multiple disciplines. They're here to bring to the microphone the truth about guns. Join them by calling 457-1290. Now, Shooting from the Hip. On AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM. News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome, listeners, to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road, down in Moraine, just across from DP&L. And you can reach us by phone at 937-293-3914 or on the web at sim-trainer.com. I want to encourage our listeners, if you have any questions, concerns, issues you want to talk about today, to please give us a call at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'll be more than glad to get you on the air and take care of some of the concerns you might have. I also want to remind our listeners that today is the one-year anniversary of the show.
Find
it hard to believe that we've already been going for 12 months, except for the few weeks we were off the air during UD football. But it's been a great run, and we're looking so much forward through the next year and what that might bring.
I just can't believe how fast that first year has flown by. I mean, it just hardly seems like we've just been getting started, and here we are already a year into it. So a real big thanks goes out to everybody who's followed the show and tracked us and joined our Facebook page. And it's been a lot of fun, and we couldn't do it without our tremendous audience. And just thanks very much for being there, folks.
I just want to reaffirm what Mark just said. It's great being here. It's great being here as a service to you. Obviously, this is a great boost for the range. It's been wonderful. People that come down there and say they heard us on the air and they heard us talking about this issue or that issue, and we're able to help them with some of their issues related to firearms, whether it's training, firearm selection, whatever it might be. And many of them get a start just listening to us on the air on Saturday afternoons from 2 to 3. We've gotten a lot of good feedback from our listeners, and we just want to continue that, and we want to live up to your expectations. So again, give us a call, send us an email, whatever it is, and we definitely want to help you with whatever concerns you might have, and make it an interesting show and make it useful as we go into the second year.
I started a discussion on our Facebook page, so anybody that has Facebook and wants to connect to that, you can get out to the Facebook page. You can get to that from our radio page at sim-trainer.com/radio, and there's a link directly to our Facebook page there. So if you want to make some comments or have some suggestions for where we might go with the show, you can put that out in the Facebook page. There's an open discussion already started.
I want to start off today's show by talking a little bit about a topic that we periodically visit, but we haven't for a while, and that's a kind of mindset or mental preparation for confrontation. I kind of was reminded about that this past week, because in my job I was at a two-week-long intensive training session, and one day was a full day devoted to Lieutenant Colonel U.S. Army retired Dave Grossman, who did a seminar entitled The Bulletproof Mind, whereby he delivers a presentation kind of hardening the troops to the realities of the world and letting all of us know, or reminding us all, that there's going to be bad things that are going to come our way, and it's okay that we take care of them the way we take care of them. And he talks about the dynamics of lethal confrontation. He particularly spends time dealing with the psychological and emotional issues that surround that. And I want to remind our listeners that we regularly spend time here talking about firearm selection, other equipment, holsters, training, and all those are very, very, very important. But I want you to start taking a little bit more seriously this whole concept of mental preparation for confrontation, because it's going to be what you do before the confrontation that is going to have a direct result on the outcome in a positive way on your side. Ultimately, it's going to be your preparation mentally for what you're going to encounter, the types of situations that you're going to encounter, and your response that's going to carry you through. And then there's the issue of post-traumatic issues that come up. And so I want you to start thinking about these things. You can get online and talk, get on some of the forums that are out there. You can do searches and find articles relative to mental preparation for confrontation. I know the NRA does things of that nature. The monthly publications frequently have articles related to that. Both of his books, Lieutenant Colonel Grossman's books, On Killing and On Combat, are definitive sources and I think must reads for anybody that's serious about this whole concept of personal protection and mental preparation for that.
One of the things that we talk about in our concealed carry class is making the decision that you are able to do what's necessary in the case of a violent confrontation where your life is at risk or someone else's life is at risk, some other innocent person, and you need to do what's necessary at that point to defend innocent life. And the time to make the decision that you are capable of doing whatever's necessary in that situation is not in the middle of that highly stressful encounter. You need to make that decision before you start carrying a firearm for personal defense. That's one of the reasons why we go over that in some detail in our concealed carry class, because you don't want to be carrying a firearm that you're not already willing to use when the situation dictates that it's appropriate. Now, clearly, you don't go out looking for a situation like that, and we certainly never would even imply that. But the point is that if you are in that situation and you have made the preparations necessary to arm yourself and going through the process to get a license to carry a concealed handgun, but you have not made the mental preparation that says, I am able to do what is necessary at that point. If it's me or them, it's not going to be me, at least not without a fight. And that's why it's important. That's part of that mental preparation.
I want to give you just a very recent example of a spontaneous incident that you could be cast into the middle. About an hour ago, maybe not even an hour ago, one of the members walked in the front door of the range, and he said, hey, guys, there's a disturbance going on right down the street. And we said, where at? And we're just right down here. And we stepped outside the front door, and sure enough, there were three cars stopped at a light about 200 yards away, and various individuals were running back and forth, yelling, screaming, and taunting each other. And that was only a couple hundred yards away. That could have very easily been on my lot, and had Mark or I or one of the member or any combination of us going out there and tried to intervene, we could have been put in the midst of a situation spontaneously and been called upon to make split second, potentially life-threatening decisions. I want to tell you, I'm ready for that because of the mental preparation I take myself through. Obviously, my job dictates that. I know Mark is. We talk about that. We train that. The member that happened to come in was an off-duty police officer. I know he was ready for that, but many civilians are not. And you are actually more likely to be cast in the middle of those spontaneous situations than police because they go down. They're right in the middle of public. Citizens are in the midst of what's going on, and the police are on their way. So it's you that are going to be in the middle, and I want you to think about the ramifications if you're not ready.
Now, for any one individual, obviously, the police are in situations where that's more likely to occur. But if you consider the number of civilians and the number of police officers, it's thousands to one. And when you have a thousands to one ratio, civilians are much more likely to be involved in a situation like that than police officers in general. So that doesn't necessarily mean that because you're carrying a firearm, you're more likely. That's certainly not the case. And it doesn't mean that the place that you live is necessarily a violent or dangerous place. It's just that's what the way the odds and the statistics work out. As a civilian, we're much more likely to be involved in something like that than the police are.
Well, and another thing is that even when the police are called, the time that it takes us to get there, typically family members, neighbors, distant relatives, innocent bystanders are assisting and trying to mediate prior to our arrival or while we're en route. So they're cast right in the middle of it while the tensions are usually the highest. When we get on the scene, typically it reaches its peak and then it starts to go down because they realize they better start calming themselves down before they end up getting themselves toted off to jail. But citizens get themselves in the middle of those kinds of situations on a regular basis. And it's just something that you need to be ready for. You need to be thinking about. And when we're talking about preparation, I know a lot of times something will come on TV and it'll be not so pleasant, some of the real stories of the highway patrol, whatever it might be. I want to encourage you to watch some of those and think about those scenarios and what you would do if you were in the midst of that situation.
Yeah, they're tough to watch, but it's important mental preparation to be able to see that this is some of the things that can happen.
We're going to go ahead and go to a break. When we come back, we're going to hit the phone lines. I encourage all our listeners to call in at 457-1290, and we'll get you on the air. You're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome, our listeners, back to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by SimTrainer. We're going to go out to the phones. We've got several callers on the line. I want to encourage our listeners to call in at 457-1290 with any concerns you might have, and we're going to get you on the air. We're going to start off with Dan from Lima. Dan has a question about registration of guns in different state. Dan, are you with us?
I originally am from Pennsylvania, and I bought two guns there when I used to live there, and I've been out here in Ohio for about 10 years now, and I thought about bringing them out here. Do I need to register them with Ohio?
No, there's no gun registration in Ohio. There are some states that do have gun registration, and you have to take them to the local sheriff's office or police department. But there's nothing like that in Ohio. There's no registration. There's no checks. There's nothing. The only time that there's even a background check is run is when you do a purchase from a federally licensed firearms dealer, and that's a national FBI check.
Okay. That's what I was wanting to know there, because I've been wanting to have them out here for the last several years and just haven't had the chance to, for fear of if somebody broke into my house and I used the gun, could I be in trouble?
Yeah, that's the fact that you have the gun. If you use it in an appropriate way, and certainly someone breaking into your house in the middle of the night would be one of those things that would be considered a situation where you could reasonably and honestly believe that you were at risk of grave bodily harm. And so, you know, that is certainly the criteria. Has nothing to do with when you got the firearm or how you purchased it or whether you just brought it into the state from some other place.
Well, that's great. I appreciate knowing that now.
Okay, Dan, that's a pretty common question. It comes in a variety of different forms. Typically, people are concerned about what they can do if they purchase a firearm from one state and they live in another state, and that's a totally different circumstance. If you live in the original state and you move, the guns come with you, and there's no registration in the subsequent state, at least not here in Ohio. But that's a good question. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Let's go out to Craig in Fairborn. Craig, you with us?
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on your discussion on mental preparation. A few years ago, I had an incident where I was home and someone came to the door and they apparently were intoxicated and high on drugs, and they actually started forcing their way into the house, and I ended up fighting this person at the front door with my two toddlers standing behind me. And I found myself yelling for my wife to get the gun. I believe this guy had a gun. He had something in his waistband. And we fought for a minute or so while my wife was getting the gun and trying to call the police at the same time. And you know, I was fully prepared to do what was necessary to defend my kids. But the bad side of everything that happened was, when I did get the firearm in my hand, we had a safety lock on it because we had young children. And despite the hours of training on releasing that lock in the dark, upside down, backwards, and everything else, I was totally unable to manipulate the lock system.
You have described something that we talk about quite a bit in our concealed carry class, and that is, what does the body do under that violent, stressful encounter? Fine motor coordination is one of the first things that goes.
Yes. I felt like Mickey Mouse. My gloves, my hands felt like they were inside winter mittens.
And only three fingers at that.
Exactly. And I had 8 years in the Marine Corps. I was OPATA certified firearms for security work. I've been hunting and shooting since I was 10 years old. And, you know, there was nothing I could do. I basically had a club at that point. Luckily, I had a very large dog that got in there and got a hold of the guy and backed him off the porch while I got the door shut. I know a lot of people who carry concealed, and they'll carry chamber empty in a holster because they're worried about you know, accidental discharge or whatever. And for me, for a while, carrying a Glock or something similar to that, I had the same concerns. But then I really studied and talked to a lot of people and decided that was just not appropriate, you know, based on experience and knowledge from other people. And I went with a very secure holster. You know, I figure spend as much as you need to have a good solid holster and have it ready to go. Otherwise, it literally is just a club. And that 1 or 2 seconds that it may take to charge that weapon is going to be just a little too much time.
Craig, I just want to let you know that I could not have scripted a call that I would have wanted to come into the show today any better than what you've brought up, because you've brought up so many of the relevant issues that we discuss, that we teach in our classes, and I just wanted to address a couple. First of all, when you talk about that preparation and that practice, it's so critical that you spend time, once you've developed a plan, carrying out the plan. And it has to involve your wife, because you saw in that spontaneous situation where you didn't have the time nor the ability to think this out ahead of time to get the gun yourself. She had to get the gun. Well, she needs to practice getting the gun in ready condition, and ultimately, I would say, getting ready to use the gun herself. So
right.
In addition to you, right, it'd be a good idea for her getting some firearms training, and then you two rehearsing this together. And one of the things, I want to tell you, you're not alone in this, and it's not only civilians, but law enforcement officers, military personnel, they go through the same sorts of things. What carries them through most of the time, fortunately for those of us in law enforcement, is the training they fall back on under those highly stressful, ever-changing situations that are very, very stressful, and they result in all sorts of strange physiological, psychological, and emotional changes in the human body. But everybody goes through those. That's human. You can't eliminate that. The key, though, your training is how quickly you regain rational thought and start doing effective things to protect yourself and your family members. So you're thinking along the right lines. I'm glad that incident turned out in your favor. And I'm also glad that just based on the tone of your voice and the things you've said, you recognize the need for training. And I hope the rest of the listeners understand and appreciate that, because that's a step in the right direction. And I couldn't thank you more for your call and your comments.
Okay. If I could real quick, you know, you mentioned something really important about having my wife involved. But also, if you have kids, you know, I have quite a few kids now, and I've explained to all of them, you know, don't be scared when you see that daddy has his gun. It's there to protect you from bad people.
Right.
And, you know, obviously all the standard safety things, but also, you know, if we have someone approach us in a parking lot, you know, this is what you do. You know, the older kids grab the younger kids and get to the other side of the car, you know, all the particulars, and let them know that, you know, run back to the store for help. Do this, do that. And, you know, the obvious thing, protect each other and get away from me so that I can do what I need to do to protect you.
That is really excellent advice. And unfortunately, that's advice that doesn't come from enough sources. We get all kinds of information about how to run a fire drill with your family, but you never hear anything about what do we do if there's something really seriously bad that happens. And you have just laid it out beautifully.
Yep. Craig, again, I just can't emphasize enough the importance of what you're already doing. You're on the right track. I want to encourage you and the rest of the listeners to take those preventive steps or those positive steps to get yourself ready for those kinds of confrontations, and you're going to be in great shape. The other thing I wanted to mention about what you just said there, Craig, is you mentioned the chamber empty syndrome. We definitely recommend against that. If you're going to carry a gun, carry it loaded and be ready to use it.
Absolutely.
Carry a gun that you're familiar with, that you're totally familiar with the functional operation of it, and get it on. We're going to have to go to a break. We come back, we have several callers on the line. You're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now FM 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by SimTrainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. You can reach us again at 293-3914 by phone or on the web at sim-trainer.com. I also want to comment right now just a little bit more on the last caller, Craig, when he was talking about mental preparation for that kind of confrontation. Another thing we do at Sim Trainer that prepares people for this type of encounter is our tactical training league on Tuesday nights. The purpose of that league, it's not the traditional fun and gun. And don't get me wrong, those things are fun. What the USPSA and IPSC and other organizations do, I participate in, I enjoy tremendously. But we have a little bit different focus because of the overall orientation of our facility and the kind of the philosophy that underrides our training, being preparing people for confrontation and maximizing their performance. In our T3 weekly, we put you into stressful situations where you have to draw your firearm from a concealed holstered position. You have to engage a specific number of targets in the order that the course specifies. You have to move to cover simultaneously, shooting while you move. Once you get to cover, you may have to do a reload, or you might have to activate a secondary target and then deal with that target while there's good guy targets being presented and then a moving target going across the back. And you have to remember the firing sequence. You have to perform in front of your peers. You're performing for time. And this is a competitive league, so they're obviously competing against each other. And all those serve as what I call prefabricated stressors. Really, the only way we could immerse you into a realistic situation is if we shot back at you, but that's not practical.
We've been trying to figure out a way to do that, yeah. But you know, nobody is willing to go downrange.
We've not been able to figure that out. So the next best thing is just to provide you with a number of prefabricated stressors that will get your heart rate elevated and will help kick in all of these stress responses so that you can start feel it. And I have to remember, just last week, I put him through a pretty tough one, and Mark tells yeah. everybody that I'm diabolically diabolical, but last week might have been particularly diabolical in that we had the first stage of the scenario was a series of targets. It was the same person but in four different positions, and they had engaged the person. The scenario was such that they just walked into a restaurant and there was an altercation going on and they chose to get involved. And when they go back there, all of a sudden the person turns and points a gun at them, fires at them, and that target went down. Then another one came up. He was in a different position. Then another one came up and he was running back toward the back of the restaurant. And finally, the fourth target, he took a position behind a table and was firing again. And they had to make split-second shoot, don't shoot decisions based on the information they had, which was nothing more than they were in the restaurant and the suspect's a white male wearing a black shirt and a pair of blue jeans. And they had to react. And I will tell you, some of them froze. Some of them had very delayed responses, even though they're very good shooters. If you put a gun in their hand mm-hmm. and you tell them to put 10 shots in a 2-inch ring from 15 feet, they'll do it all day long. But in this particular situation, it caused their mind to start gathering information while stress was kicking in, and it resulted in slowed response, delayed response, and in many cases, missed shots, which is the other part of the formula. You got to practice shooting under stressful circumstances. Otherwise, your shots aren't always going to be on the mark.
People that come to our league, especially folks who have been shooting for a while, and they come and they shoot at the league for the first time, universally they tell us, this is nothing like anything I've ever done before. When you're standing in a stall and shooting at a stationary target, it is one thing that's very valuable practice and helps to build the fundamental skill sets, but that's completely different from dealing with a violent encounter under stress. And although we can't add the violence in actual fact, we do a pretty good job of adding the stress.
Well, and I can just tell you one gentleman, Frank, and he knows who he is, and I hope he's listening because he's a good friend. He walked out of the range, and I was standing behind the counter, and he went, "Phew, wow, I can't believe it. Oh, my gosh, I've never been through anything like that." And then here's the key, in my life. In my life. Yeah. And then my point is, the reason we do the league the way we do it, we want to immerse you in those situations when there's no deadly consequence. It's simply a matter of how well you do in the league, how well your score is, and how you progress the next time you're exposed to that situation so that you do better, with the ultimate goal of better peak performance when it really counts. And that's the beauty of what we do.
Yeah, and I remember the first time that I shot at the league. When I came out of that the very first time, my pulse was racing. I was experiencing all of those same kinds of things, that adrenaline surge that you get in a violent encounter. And of course, nobody was going to walk away with injuries at the end of that day. It was just a matter of how well did you perform against the clock and did you get your hits on the target? It doesn't matter. Your brain and your body will respond to that stress in very similar ways to what would happen in the real encounter. The better you are practiced, the more opportunities you've had to deal with that, the better that you will be able to perform when you finally get to that situation.
I want to remind your listeners, if you're interested in getting exposed to that kind of training, you don't have to be a member to participate in the league. We do ask that you come out one evening, and it's every Tuesday night from about 6 to 9. We ask that the first time you come out and observe so that you know what to expect, and then you can start shooting once you've demonstrated competency with your firearm, and you can take yourself to whatever level of competency you're willing to put the time and effort into trying to achieve. But Tuesday nights from 6 to 9 down at the range, and first night just come and watch, and we'll see what we can do for you.
Yeah, bring your toys anyway, just in case. You may decide that after you've watched for an hour or so, you say, yeah, I think I can probably do this, and we're more than happy to get new shooters in and do it all the time.
Okay, let's go out to the phones. We have had Paula on hold for a while. Paula, you want to, are you out there to Paula?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead with your question.
Thank you for taking our call and for the interview.
We're having a little bit of trouble hearing you. It's kind of noisy.
Get some feedback.
Are you still there? I think we lost her. Paula, okay. Give us a call back at 457-1290.
Let's go out to Claire in Washington Township. Claire, are you with us?
Yes.
Go ahead with your question or comment.
I want to make a comment about your first caller, who, in spite of all his training and in the Marine Corps, he did what I would consider the first foolish thing, and that was opening the door to someone he didn't know or was expecting. So I think your show, I just tuned in for the first time. I find it interesting, but I think prevention is always the first thing. If he had ascertain who was at the door, you're under no obligation to open the door for anyone that knocks on the door or rings your doorbell.
Claire, you are exactly right, and we were remiss in not commenting on that. We were just talking about so many other issues that you brought up, but kind of first and foremost is that very issue that you have no obligation to answer the door. I want to follow that up with the fact that most people, though, and this is kind of something we need to think about, and I got a feeling that it maybe has something to do with the generation or their age. They're not as careful.
I was just going to say, maybe you know my age.
Claire, I'm guessing you're a little bit older than me, and you're much more cautious than I would be about going to open my door.
So I do have a question, too. If I'm going out by myself, and I don't do that at night, but in the daytime, if I'm in my own car, I could use the panic button if somebody approached me. But other than that, what's the best thing for a single woman to carry when she's out alone?
Well, first of all, let me mention that in addition to using the panic button is the evasive maneuvering. In other words, drive away from the problem, back out of the parking space, go through the red light if you have to. I'm going to tell you.
I mean, once you have exited the car.
Okay.
And are walking into a store from the parking lot. These things are happening in the daytime now, so I'm cautious, but things can happen, and I always have my husband with me.
Well, I want to tell you that even if you have your husband with you, something that's very simple that you carry with you every time is your set of keys, correct?
Yes.
Okay, have those keys ready at hand and be willing to use them.
I do have them ready at hand. Whether I would be able to use them or not is another
situation. Well, it doesn't take a whole lot of coordination. You're just going to slash those keys about the face area of the attacker while you scream and holler and kick and do whatever else, and hopefully your husband's going to help you out a little bit too. And
so you have classes for that?
Yeah, we have a course called Total Personal Defense.
Yes.
And if you live in the South Dayton communities, another class I want to have you encourage to check with your local police departments and see if they offer the RAD class. The RAD stands for Rape Aggression Defense. It's designed specifically for women. Only women can attend.
Okay.
It's a tremendous course, and it doesn't require any particular level of fitness in order to participate or complete the class because you go at your pace. A lot of it has to do with the
sponsors. That
it'd be the local police departments. For example, I live in Kettering and work in Kettering, and we offer that program several times throughout the summer and through the year. And then Centerville and some of the other departments may also offer that. But I would encourage you to check with your local police department.
Thank you. You probably have other callers, so I won't ask any more questions.
You asked a wonderful question, and I thank you so much for your call, Claire.
Thank you.
Have
Bye.
A good day.
One of the things that we do cover in the concealed carry class is that we talk about just because you have a gun doesn't mean that it's necessarily appropriate to use it. And the one gunfight you can be sure that you are going to win is the one that you're not in. Let's go to a break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. We've got folks on the call on the line that we'll talk to after we get back from the break, and you can get on the line at 457-1290. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.
I want to welcome my listeners back to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip. I'm your host, Jeff Pedro, in with Mark Avery, and I want to just go right out to the phones today. We've got Jay from Kettering. Jay from Kettering, who has a question about recently purchased handgun. Jay, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Go ahead with your question or comment.
I had a question. I recently purchased a Springfield XD45, and I'm taking a carry to conceal class in about a few weeks. And it's a pretty bulky gun. It's not too big. It's got a 4-inch barrel, but I was just concerned with maybe being able to deal with it effectively. And I had a question for you guys regarding that.
Go ahead. Go with your question. You just want to know.
Well, where's the best place for me to carry it? And I'm about 6'2", I weigh about 190, so it fits me well. But to be comfortable, I'm curious as far as what kind of holster I'll be best to use.
Well, the best way to carry it's going to be on your strong side with some sort of, in my opinion, a pancake-type holster that's outside the belt. However, okay. I will tell you that the new Super Tuck holsters do provide you with an option for carrying inside the waistband. But I think the best thing right from the beginning to try, if you want to carry it inside the waistband, the Super Tuck's really your most viable option. And outside the waistband, a pancake-style holster, leather, good quality leather holster. We carry the Galco line. We rep the Galco line. But any of the good leather products that are out there. You want to make sure you have two belt fasteners. You don't just necessarily want a paddle that's going to go down inside your pants. I prefer a belt mounted, a good leather pancake holster that has a security mechanism like a snap or some other device that secures the weapon into the holster.
Okay.
Do you have any restrictions on the kind of clothing that you need to wear? I mean, some people are like business casual. They wear a shirt and pants, and they don't normally wear a coat, and it would be inappropriate. So something like that limits your options a little bit. But if you can wear a shirt out, for example, a shirt tail out, then that would certainly cover a holster like that. Where are you in that?
Well, I can wear pretty much any time that I would feel like I would need to carry it, I could probably wear pretty much what I want.
Okay.
I was just wondering if I made a good choice as far as the model goes, because it's not a small gun, but it's compact.
The answer to that question is,
after I purchased it, if maybe I should have looked at something maybe a little smaller.
Well, the answer to that question is how well you handle the gun. If you have no problem carrying it on your person, it comes down to how well you handle the gun.
Well, that's why I purchased it. I love the way it feels in my hand, and it handles great, and I've shot it before.
Then what it really amounts to then is you can adjust your clothing in a way that allows you to carry it and conceal it well, and that's really much more important. You can conceal almost anything on your person using the right holster and using the clothing adjustments that you need to make. So yeah, if the gun fits you well and you shoot it well, that's really more important than what and then you can make adjustments to carry it the way that'll conceal well.
All right, great. Thanks, guys. I really love the show.
Thanks for your call. Let's go to Bob in Dayton. Bob, are you with us?
Yes.
Go ahead with your question or comment.
Okay, I hold a permit in both Ohio and Florida, but I travel a lot in an RV, which is a fifth wheel, and I'm wondering what the laws are for. Is that your home, or do we have to have different laws for different states to be able to carry that, or in the fifth wheel?
Unfortunately, yeah, it's the latter. There are different rules in every state. Ohio does not treat a motor home as though it were your home, unless it is truly your home. If you've got a park, if it's parked someplace and it stays there pretty much permanently, your motor vehicle is not considered an extension of your home in Ohio. It is considered that in Georgia and in several other states. So, yeah, you're just going to have to go out to the websites for the different states. There's if you go to our website at sim-trainer.com/radio, there are several times during the weeks of the show over the last year that we've had links to various handgun law sites, handgunlaw.us, concealed carry, the U.S. Concealed Carry Association, the NRA Institute for Legislative Action. And again, when we put the notes up for this show, I'll move those up so they're at the top. But you'll find them at sim-trainer.com/radio. We've got to go to take our last break of the hour. and we'll be back and go back directly back out to the phones. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO. Welcome back to the show. We've got just a few minutes left, so let's go directly out to the phones. Who do we have on next? Is that Bob?
No, we have Randy from Kettering. Randy, you have a question about putting the wrong kind of ammunition in a gun. Go ahead, Randy, with your question or comment.
Yeah, my wife and I experienced it at the range just the other day. We have identical Smith & Wesson firearms, and she has 9mm. I have 40.
Almost identical.
When I loaded the 40 magazine, I accidentally got 9mm in it. I noticed the mistake, but my question was what if that had actually gotten chambered? Would that 9 probably have stripped off? And what would I have expected at that point? Would it have fired?
It wouldn't have stripped off. It would have loaded into the chamber, and you'd have got one shot, and you would have noticed a very distinctly different poofing noise, because obviously, since there's space on the side of the casings, the gases will escape down the barrel instead of coming out the ejection port, and you would have just basically had a locked up gun. We certainly don't recommend that anybody try it to see what happens. We're just going to tell you that 9mm round would have come out of the barrel. It likely would not have caused any damage to the gun. You'd have got one shot. The gun would have locked up. In some cases, it locks to the extent that you really have to go to significant lengths to get it apart. You're going to take the magazine out, and sometimes you have to really rip the magazine out, lock the slide to the rear, and then do what you have to do to remove that casing, which will just be laying in there freely, or it'll just drop out once you pull the magazine out, but it's not going to necessarily cause any damage to the gun.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, thanks to everybody for joining the show today. This is our first anniversary with Shooting from the Hip, and we'll be back next week at 2:00 on Shooting from the Hip. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.